your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
We all go through life secure in the knowledge of who we are. But what would you do if one day you found out that you grew up in a family that wasn't quite as normal as you were led to believe? You see, the world around us is very complex. It's made up of many layers. And when you start to peel back those layers, either by choice or by accident, you just might discover a hidden truth. The magical world and the mortal worlds are intermingled, with no physical boundary between them. It's all a matter of perception. In Shelley Gordon's case, it's also a matter of destiny. And what she uncovers about herself after her chance encounter with Timothy Titchmarsh, a mysterious little old man with a twinkle in his eye, changed her life completely. He told her of shocking, carefully guarded family secrets that had been unspoken for many generations. But the biggest shock of all was learning that she was not only a witch, but the great-granddaughter of an elite sorceress who tragically died before she could carry out a vital and perilous task that Shelley was now fated to complete. The thought of having to learn the craft, integrate herself into the magical world, and risk her life to finish the task is enough to give anyone a bad case of the collywobbles. Marla Brooks' new fiction book, A Bad Case of the Collywobbles, is now available at Amazon.com in both paperback and Kindle formats. Visit her website at marlabrooks.com to find out more.
As autumn blows the bones of winter in, scarlet leaves ride the wind. Deeper nights come closing in, stay close to hearth and home. Red gum burns in fireside, wood smoke drifts into the night. Awaken in the chilly light, rejoice the harvest home. Warm days leaving, winter's creeping, make your nest and bide your time. Chill winds reaching, Jack Frost seeking, the call of winter time. A dusky sunset and searching wind, shadows lengthen as the days draw in, signaling the summer's end. The woods will soon be sleeping. Clear is the air through golden days. Soon mist will weave, light will wane. But now it is the time of change, the time of long nights dreaming. Bright flames leaping, dogs lie sleeping. Warm your hands by fireside. Chill winds reaching, Jack Frost seeking, the call of winter time. Come, said the leaves to the wind one day, come all the meadows and we will play. Put on your dresses of scarlet and gold, for the summer is gone and the days grow cold. Autumn rains, still the dust, drowning leaves of red and rust. Trees stripped bare by sudden gusts, the weathercock is spinning. Toadstools mark the forest floor, beneath the bare-limbed corridor. The coldest time returns once more, and the dark time is beginning. Warm days leaving, winter's creeping, warm your hands by fireside. Chill winds reaching, Jack Frost seeking, the call of winter time.
Spirit act, bide within the law you must, in perfect love, perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Tonight we're going to be talking about a subject that, depending on the situation, can run the gamut from heartwarming to extremely frightening. My guest tonight is parapsychologist Cal Cooper, and we're going to be talking about phone calls from the dead. Now, Cal spent much of his early life reading up on the paranormal at his local school library where he could, whenever he could, and years later he developed an interest in human behavior and the many questions we always want to ask about the mind and its capabilities. It's 2 o'clock in the morning for Cal and I can't talk. All right. His many areas of interest in psychology include research methods, beliefs, and the psychology of death. However, parapsychology is something that he is most recognized for, with his research into the survival of death, psychic abilities, poltergeists, apparitions, and hauntings, and he's received much media interest for his research into the phone calls from the dead. And I'm really glad he's joining me tonight, because then I don't have to be the only one tripping over my tongue. Hi, Cal. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on. At least I don't have to read anything. Everything's coming from memory, but as it's 2 in the morning, that would probably just come out just as bad.
Well, you know, it's always good to share. all right, so let's start, with the very obvious. I mean, phone calls from the dead are not as uncommon as people might think, are they?
They do appear to be quite common. The only problem is determining whether someone's actually going to report it or bring it forward, and if they do, where's that going to go? It's not always going to end up at university or being sent to a parapsychologist. It might go to a research team or something similar, and they might not actually do anything with it. So it's hard to actually say how many people on average every year do report what they believe to be a phone call from the dead, or how many in general seem to occur. So what I've been doing is mainly collecting as many as I can from word of mouth, or just putting numerous posts on Facebook, going to conferences and asking people, and sometimes people read up on what I've been doing and then approach me. So it's really potluck, really, as to whether these cases get brought forward or not. But it's hard to say how often they do actually occur.
Mm-hmm. Well, what piqued your interest in this particular aspect of spirit communication in the first place?
Well, as you just read out, I studied psychology at the University of Northampton as my first port of call when I was training in parapsychology. And I read numerous books on the paranormal while I was at university, and the main books I was interested in were that of David Scott Rogo and Raymond Bayliss, who were a parapsychologist and psychical researcher based in California. And they were also part of the Southern Californian Society for Psychical Research. D. Scott Rogo wrote over 20 books in all on numerous areas: extrasensory perception, psychokinesis, out-of-body experiences, you name it, he wrote something on it somewhere. And he wrote over 100 academic papers and articles. And Raymond Bayliss wrote a handful of books as well, and was also noted in parapsychology for being the discoverer of electronic voice phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I went through several of their books I noticed that they'd actually done one together called Phone Calls from the Dead. So I bought it, read it, thought it was quite interesting, and at first didn't think that much to it until I actually carried on with my studies and thought, you know what, I've never actually come across any other cases in journals apart from this book. There must be more. So I had to delve into their books again and found that one of their follow-up books had an additional chapter just outlining the phenomenon. And also Raymond Bayliss wrote another book with Elizabeth McAdams, which was based on looking at the survival evidence in parapsychology, any phenomena suggestive of the mind surviving after death. And they had a very short chapter on it too. So for the past couple of years, I've literally been diving into any kind of historical area of telephonic communication I can, asking people if they've had these accounts, and searching for as much as I can to kind of go back to what they did and also look for the stuff that they couldn't find or get hold of, and try and revive the research, because now we have not just landline telephones, but we have mobile phones, we have text mm-hmm. message and email. So I've been trying to take this further, but that was what triggered my interest, just stumbling across their book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been doing a bit of study on the subject, independent study, and found out that there have been several theories put forth about how and why this phenomenon happens. One is that the dead do place the calls through supernatural manipulation of the phone mechanisms and circuitry. Another claim is that they're hallucinations caused in part by psychokinesis, accomplished by, you know, subconsciously in the recipient's head. And other theories suggest that calls are pure fantasy or tricks played on people by low-level spirits. Now, that kind of interested me. So where do you stand on all this?
I'm very impressed that you've done that research. No, that's good. Well, let's do it in reverse, shall we? The first and most obvious cause for these events is that it's just purely fraud or misinterpretation. Someone could know that a relative of yours has recently passed over. They might have a grudge against you for something, and they might just want to play the ultimate prank just to get one back at you by actually creating this prank phone call and pretending to be someone from the dead. You're in an emotional state. If they put on a voice or so on and so forth, you're inclined to probably believe it. Or it could mm-hmm. just be misinterpretation. If you, say, just lost a child and you just get a telephone call where the person on the other end just says, "Mum or Dad," and then they put the phone down, you could interpret this as being your child. You won't think to actually follow up the telephone call and find out from the call company where that telephone call came from. And there are quite a few cases that have been brought forward that are much like that. After that, you had the psychokinetic theory. Now, there's a lot of research in psychology that suggests that after we have lost a spouse, a lot of people that are in the stages of early widowhood will report hallucinations of seeing their dead spouse. They'll report a sense of presence, believe they get touched on the shoulder now and then, or similar phenomena like that. And when we look at a handful of these cases, there are some people that have lost a spouse, and up to 30 to 40 years later, they can still be having these same hallucinations. So it could be that might trigger them to hallucinate the telephone ringing and having this conversation, so they can have this final farewell. Because a lot of these cases are actually very good for you psychologically, because they've cleared you of this depressive state in the grieving process, knowing that there's some form of continuation. And it also gives you a psychology of hope that when we die, our consciousness and personality isn't simply extinguished. Now, if we add on to that, people might say, well, that's quite far-fetched. Let's make it even more far-fetched. Some people might believe that because you're in a stressful state or grieving state, psychokinetically, you make the telephone ring because you want that final goodbye. And in a lot of the cases that Rogge and Bayliss found, usually only the telephone closest to the person who's lost someone would ring, even though there are other landline telephones in a house. It'd just be the one closest to them, and it would ring with a slightly lower bell tone than it usually would, suggesting that somehow the telephone might be being manipulated, and that's where the psychokinetic element comes in. And then upon picking up the telephone, you have the hallucination, which is the conversation. And then the final one, once we've ruled out all the rational explanations, could be genuinely the dead or whatever aspect of personality is somehow manipulating the electrons in the line, making the telephone ring, and creating the telephone call from the dead.
Mm-hmm. So, now, it's quite common for people to try and get messages from spirit, either through an EVP, talking board, or other forms of divination. But is it possible to ask for a phone call from the other side in the same manner, or are these all spontaneous, kind of random calls from the other side?
Exactly. A lot of people, when I talk about phone calls from the dead, say, I heard of this brilliant EVP case, and I have to stop right there. I have researched EVP, but EVP and phone calls from the dead, I believe, some people might disagree with me, but from my own background in parapsychology and studying both sides extensively, I have to insist that EVP is the purposeful or accidental recording of what we believe to be voices of the dead. The telephone calls from the dead are a spontaneous phenomena, and they occur much like any other telephone conversation. They don't appear to be any different. Usually, until after the telephone call has taken place, do we realise something is out of place and something unusual is going on. And there are some cases within the telephone calls from the dead where you intend to make a telephone call to someone. You might know that they're dead, and you still make the telephone call, but often you don't know they're dead. You make the telephone call, they answer it, you have the conversation, you put the phone down, and then some hours later someone tells you, oh, they died yesterday. And then you get the shock knowing that only earlier that day you'd spoken to them. So there are different categories that the phone call types fall into, and Rogo and Bayliss found that there are five in all. You could have a simple call, which is the grieving stage. You just get a short ring and maybe one or two words from this person that you know to be dead. If you don't know that they're dead, it could make a type 2 call, which is known as a prolonged call. So you could have up to a half-hour conversation with them, put down the phone, and then later discover them to be dead. The type 3, you make the telephone call. Type 4 could be a mixture of type 1 and 2. So type 4, you could have a case where you know someone to be dead and still have a long conversation with them, don't know they're dead, and have a short conversation with them. This is all quite complex. And then we have finally type 5.
No, it's fascinating.
Type 5 isn't from the dead. These are called intention calls. This is where you intend to call someone, but at the last minute you change your mind for some reason and decide, well, I've got a lot of paperwork to do, I'll go and call them later this afternoon. At the point you intended to make the call and have a particular topic of conversation with someone that you know, somehow, in some cases, that person still receives that telephone call at that time from someone with your voice, your speech patterns, your personality, and the topic you were going to relay to them. They might make a message, it might end up on their answer phone, or they might have a whole conversation. Then later when you ring, they say, why are you ringing again? You rang me this morning. Or something to that nature. And it suggests a bit of chaos theory, that whole situation where, because you have a choice to make, if you pick the yes or no, picking yes, there's always that alternate path of reality where you chose no. And it creates two sort of separate paths. In the intention call cases, you're seeing that what seems to be that little glimpse of a separate path of reality happening, or at least it's suggestive of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just thinking, too, with the advent, because you were talking about different types of calls, with the advent of the Internet and people talking voice-to-voice and even face-to-face on webcam, like Skype, for example, have you heard of any calls from beyond in that medium?
We joked about this recently at the a few conferences. I was at the Society for Psychical Research conference at the University of Edinburgh, and then we went down to the University of Bath for the Seriously Strange conference. And a few of my colleagues who are also parapsychologists, they were joking about saying, has there ever been MSN or Skype from the dead? And funnily enough, there's been only a couple of cases that were brought forward recently, but they are bizarre. There was one lady who works in an old haunted mansion as a member of staff who does some of the tour guides around it. And one of my friends, who's a well-known paranormal investigator in the UK, David Scanlon, he'd done a lot of research at this mansion, and the lady came forward and said, when I go on MSN and I speak to a particular friend, one of the women who supposedly haunts the mansion, she ends up on MSN as a third party, sending messages to us back and forth, and I can ask her anything I like, and she'll start to tell me information about her past, the mansion, people that she worked with, and so on. She's preparing all the chat logs for me to put them together, but I've got to be very sceptical of this, but it's certainly unusual. It's not the first time something like that's happened. There was a famous book published in the 1980s called The Vertical Plane, and that was of a couple who were having communication with a guy from the 15th century over an old BBC computer. So if you think back to your Windows 3.5 and the old black screen and the flashing green writing, every time they left the room and came back, there would be a saved file for them, which was a new message, and they'd type back and forth. And they sent in the Society of Psychical Research, and they were there for a couple of years, and they couldn't find any explanation. There was no internet access at that time. It was just plugged in. They changed the computer. And this guy was saying that he lived in the same house that they were living in. It was bizarre.
Well, I was also reading that some people that think they have received these calls or know they did have had the phone calls traced. And when they do the trace, the number goes back to the number that they were on. It was like their landline, the house phone. And in many cases, there was only one phone in the house. Have you heard of that?
There's been different ones. I think, excuse me, I'm getting so dry at the moment. In the original data set, I think Rogo and Bailey found about 50 cases of phone calls from the dead. And about 25 of those, there were people that tried to trace the call. And when they did trace the call, there was no matching number. It said no one has actually called you at this time. So, sorry. It suggested that something paranormal was going on, and somehow the telephone itself is being manipulated because it's not coming from an outside line. Mm-hmm. There's been some cases of text messages from the dead where, again, there was a third party in one case where this supposed spirit girl was texting between these two friends, and the friends thought they were playing a prank on each other. And mm-hmm. when they checked with their mobile phone companies, the text messages that were supposedly from this little girl didn't coincide with any of the texts that they'd sent. There was no matching dates to the messages that she was sending. So they've got no way of finding out where they came from, how they traced, because they were untraceable as far as the telephone company were concerned.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also read where people who have caller ID, and I think just about everybody does in this day and age, but they've received a phone call from the other side, but claim the caller ID for that call showed a strange number like 00000000. And I've actually had a couple of numbers show up but didn't answer them, thinking it was just a snafu, all the zeros. And I think I'm kind of glad I did, and I don't think I'm ever going to pick one of those up again. But but in order for people to determine whether this is something that's really happening to them, I mean, is there something significant to look for? I mean, you hear about heavy static on the line, or that the caller's voice sounds very hollow or very far away. Is there one kind of basic thing to look for?
I only heard of the people having all the zeros or a mixture of bizarre numbers coming through the other day, and I hadn't heard any other cases. I was pleased that you've actually kind of found something that matches that.
Yeah, on my own phone.
Maybe you should have answered it. And there are some cases where people have reported static on the line, or the sound of distant winds, or it sounds like whoever's on the line is basically, if you could imagine the telephone just sat down on a table and they're trying to speak to the telephone from the other side of the room, they sound very distant. Those are only a few rare cases, though, where people have reported that. In most of the other ones, it seemed like any other telephone conversation to them. I mean, when we consider those Type 5 calls, how many of those, if they are genuine types of calls, go unnoticed because they just do seem like any other type of conversation? The person that's called you isn't dead, but you've got their intention call. You've got the call that was intended to happen but never did, and you might not mention it to them, so it just goes unnoticed. So it's very hard for these cases to actually be spotted and brought forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, there's just so much weirdness around it. Like, I was reading about a case where a man was at work and had gone out to lunch, and when he came back, there was a note on his desk from the switchboard, and the note said, "Your father called." And this guy's father had passed several years before, so he went to the operator and questioned the message, thinking, she gave him somebody else's. And she was emphatic that she didn't, and told him the call had come in just a few minutes earlier. And the message that this caller left was simply, "Tell him his father called." Is that common, to have them, leave a message? I mean, maybe on an answering machine, but with somebody.
I was just trying to find you an example from D. Scott Ruggo, because when he outlined the cases, he did actually have one of these cases himself. Both the researchers actually reported some of these unusual calls. Hang on, I'll just get it here.
Yeah,
this is a Type 5 call that Rogo himself had, where a message was left. "It was 4 o'clock on a bright Thursday afternoon, and I was lying on my living room couch thinking about making a phone call to a psychologist I knew at UCLA Neuropsychiatric Institute. Although I intended to make the call, I never did. About 6 that evening, though, I got the shock of my life when a call came in from the institute and from the office of the very psychologist I had thought about calling. The call was from her research assistant saying that he was answering my message, When I asked what in blazes he was talking about, he told me that at 4 p.m. a call had come in to them from me. The caller had left my name and asked that the call be returned. Mm. Weird.
Yeah.
But there's quite a few cases like that, but those are the intention cases that get noticed.
Uh-huh. Well, I noticed I was reading another one which made perfect sense to me. We had a big Metrolink, which is our train system here, accident a couple of years ago where several people died. And the family of one of the victims claimed that, well, they saw it on the news. They knew that their husband, son, whoever he was on the train. As soon as they heard about it, their phone started ringing, and it was from his cell phone, and they would pick it up, and there was nothing there. And this went on for 2 or 3 hours. The rescue people finally came in and started removing the bodies and everything. And at that moment, because we had it on the news continually, the moment the rescue people started removing the bodies, their phone calls from him stopped. Now, some people would jump on that immediately and say, oh, my God, that was him trying to call and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I don't know another terminology for this, but the terminology I've heard is butt calls. We all have received calls from people with cell phones who had them in their back pocket, and somehow it just did redial and we got them. So I think, you know, that in this case is very likely, because I know people tend to jump on the exciting and the entertaining and, oh boy, the spooky. But I think in many cases, like this one in particular, I tend to not agree that this was the guy trying to get a hold of them, although it could have been. I just think, you know, this is just how it happened. But, you know, there's lots of cases, several people been hoaxed and stuff, like you said. It's probably kind of difficult to point out a particular case that, and say, yes, this is it, you know?
In terms of psychology, that case is still interesting. I probably wouldn't have actually gone on to research phone calls from the dead specifically unless it had been for that case. The guy who got killed was a guy called Charles Peck, and he was at the front of the train collision when it happened, so he died on first impact. Yes. And I think it was after I'd read the book, Phone Calls from the Dead, that I stumbled across that on the internet, because I just typed in Phone Calls from the Dead, and that came up in all the recent news broadcasts. Mm-hmm. And there was different things on YouTube, there was loads of news articles all over the internet. And I read it, and I've mentioned it a few times, and I thought, well, there's loads of rational explanations from this, but it's what the public have made of it, and it's especially how the media have splashed it about as a phone call from the dead. And the family certainly believe it's a phone call from the dead. But this goes back to the type 1 cases. The family have actually probably felt a lot better from believing that their husband, their father, has actually lived on and he was trying to contact them, and somehow there is some form of life after death. Mm-hmm. It's hard to compare it to if they just thought, well, he's just died instantly, he's gone. But there was this little inkling for them that maybe something was surviving. You know, one day we might be able to meet him again. So just in terms of psychology and nothing paranormal, that was good for them in a way. But, you know, loads of people that read these reports probably took it away thinking, oh, my God, it is possible for the dead to contact the living. But when we look at that case, all they've got is just the calls coming through repeatedly. They answer it and all they hear is static, or they don't hear anything. And then eventually the calls stop just before they find his body. So it's how we interpret it. But when we look for rational explanations, the most likely explanation is the fact that they were the latest callers in this caller ID, and the phone got damaged on impact, and all it was doing was repeatedly calling them until the phone died. And let's face it, I think it went on calling them repeatedly for 3 hours, and that's enough to drain any
phone
battery.
Kill the battery.
Yeah, if it's going to do that over and over again until it dies, that's what it's going to do. And that's probably why they never recovered the phone either. It just got lost in the wreckage, damaged beyond belief, it's gone. But that case was phenomenal for how much media attention it got. Compared to all these other phone call cases, which are remarkable when you hear about them, it was just because it involved a major train crash, loads of people died, but this one experience within the whole event just kind of shook everybody and probably sent a chill down their spine. So you've got this creepy story from a natural disaster that happens quite often, train collisions, car crashes and so on. Mm-hmm. But certainly an interesting case, and as I say, I'm kind of well, I'm not thankful that, you know, what happened. It was a very bad situation, but I was interested when I stumbled across that case, because I probably wouldn't have looked into it further to say, okay, that was a mobile phone. It's not a landline telephone. Let's see if there are mobile phone cases. Let's see if this has actually kept up with technology. And funnily enough, there was an article back in 1915 in the Daily Chronicle. I think it's a newspaper over here. And someone had written an article in it called Ghosts on the Telephone by a guy called Bigby. And he'd written about people that had conversations over wireless telegraph using Morse code that were supposedly from the dead or anomalous communication. They took out the receiver aerial, so there was no way that they should still get messages, but some people... And the person at the end of this article said, this is intriguing research. I wonder if this will ever happen with a telephone. It'll be interesting if it does. And lo and behold, about 20, 30 years later, it started to.
I was thinking about cell phones. I mean, I'm guessing that reports about phone calls from the dead on cell phones have been increasing as well as the other kind. I mean, mainly because the vast number of cell phones versus landlines out there now. But it would seem, I know nothing about technology at all, but it would seem to me that it might be easier for the dead to communicate through a cell phone because of the manner in which they're sent and received versus the landlines.
Go on, tell me your theory behind that. Why would that be?
Well, from a dumb person's standpoint, landlines go through wires and things, right? Cell phones go through air. It's much easier to intercept a call. You know, people can hack a cell phone a lot easier than they can a landline. Just because of the very nature of the way it's transmitted. I mean, it's like magic through the air, as opposed to cables like we're used to seeing. That's my theory. Have you got one? Because I'm getting tongue-tied here.
No, that's a valid theory, because we don't... If ghosts are real, if people can actually survive the death, then they're obviously not something that we can kind of physically see all the time and might actually be involved in the elements such as electricity, electromagnetic fields, and far out theories. I don't necessarily believe this stuff, but if we were going to the end of believing, okay, the dead are calling us, how are they doing it? I suppose it will be easier with the mobile phones. It becomes more confusing and harder to actually distinguish between these being genuine phone calls from the dead or just technological faults. You could kind of confirm it a bit more with a landline telephone, because you know they can only do a set number of things, being so mechanical. With mobile phones, they can do a number of things. They can scare dogs and all sorts. That's a valid theory. I think I did discuss that a few times in some of my articles. And also, when you get a call company that comes through trying to sell you double glazing or holidays or stuff like that, and they call you throughout the day, sometimes when that call doesn't actually get through, you'll pick up the phone and it's just dead. Some people used to believe in some of the original call counts that they'd have those calls just after they'd lost someone, and they presumed that was them trying to actually get through and speak to them over the telephone. And I think Rogo briefly suggested, I wonder if that is a person from the other side trying to get through, but they've not quite made it. But at the same time, we have to think, okay, how many times do these call companies call us? How many times do we get these dead calls when we haven't lost someone close to us? But then someone might argue, but it might be someone else's friend or loved one that they've lost, and they've just rung the wrong telephone. I know the explanations are numerous and they're so complicated, and you know, science might rule these out straight away and say it's all nonsense. It's not applicable, it's not easy to study, but a lot of psychology isn't. Psychology, by its very nature, is so varied, spontaneous and random. There's a lot of areas of psychology that we can't actually take and repeat suitably. You could take the same person and make them do the same task over and over again. Throughout that task, their emotions are going to be different every time. Physically, they might be getting tired, they might be more alert at certain periods. But in very subtle ways, it's going to happen in different ways, even if you put them in a lab setting. And natural events that occur in the natural world, such as seeing a ghost, encountering haunting phenomena, seeing seeing poltergeist activity, or having a phone call from the dead, you're never going to be, as a researcher, you're never going to be in the right place at the right time to witness this, or someone else's account anyway. So all we've got left are these anecdotes, and this is how we study parapsychological phenomena a lot of the time. When it's these type of cases, we can take psychic abilities and study them in the lab to an extent, but it's never going to be the same as the original report, such as the sense of being stared at when you feel that someone's maybe blaring at the back of your head and you turn around in a public area and find out someone is actually staring at you. We can take that and study it in the lab, but it's not the same as in the field where you just had that feeling and you turn around. No one told you someone's going to be staring at you, which is what happens in the lab. And same goes for any of the other phenomena. It's spontaneous, it happens naturally, and by taking it into the lab, we're taking something very natural and trying to turn it into something mechanical. It goes back to the old saying of a clockwork orange. It's something natural that we're trying to turn mechanical, and it just doesn't work. We've got to kind of just sit and observe to some extent, take a whole range of these experiences, and then see what kind of patterns we can
formulate. Yeah. I've got a question from the chat room from Cece, yep. And she's asking about spectral emails and or typing on computer screens. Are there any documented cases of contact?
I've got to go back again to the Vertical Plane book. If no one's read that, I really advise you track down a copy. I think it's becoming quite scarce now, but it's written by a guy called Ken Wood. And Vertical Plane, it was written in the 1980s, I think. 1986 is a rough guess. That's quite interesting. In my own file, I think I only have one account of an email from the dead. But emails and text messages, for rational explanations, you have to put into the same category. Sometimes if you send an email to someone, it doesn't always send instantaneously. It can get delayed up to several days in some very rare cases. And this happens more so with the text messages as well. And there are some good cases that do appear to be suggestive of being sent after the person had died. And sometimes with the text messages, it's not displaying a sender, a date, or anything like that. It's just displaying the message. And there are, again, websites where you can actually send anonymous text. So you've got to look at the fraud theory. And is there someone out to get you that would actually commit such a cruel hoax on you? Mm-hmm. It's a possibility. It's something to consider. But, yeah, there are these cases. But the delayed aspect of the event is something you've got to look at. Have they sent the message just before they died? And after they died, you then finally got the message and you interpret it as a text message or an email from the dead. Because I've had cases where someone texts me, say, a year ago, and then I suddenly get a text message about a conversation I had with someone a year ago, and it's just confusing, so I have to ring them and say, why did you text me this? And that's only ever happened twice, but I was shocked that somehow the text message had been lost in cyberspace for an entire year. Mm-hmm. Where has that message been for that whole time? It's crazy. But you could see how someone would interpret it. If that person had died in between that year, you'd think, well, that's creepy, I've just got a text message from their phone. I have to say now that in a couple of the phone call cases and one of the text message cases, the people that were supposedly sending these eerie calls or text messages from beyond the grave were in fact buried with their mobile phone.
Ew!
Yeah.
Okay. Now we know what not to do during burial rituals. Yeah, I mean, there are these things that really kind of creep you out. Now, here's another theoretical question. Do you think there are certain types of people who are even more prone to receiving calls from the dead, just as there are some people who pick up terrific EVP while others of us never do? Or are these calls just, would you think, random or for a specific purpose?
I think paranormal occurrences in general are more prone to happen amongst people that are more open to believing in paranormal phenomena. A lot of psychology studies that do test parapsychological phenomena take into account each participant's religiosity, the extent in which they believe in the paranormal, their levels of death anxiety, and so on and so forth. And a lot of the time people that are getting, say, high scores in psychic abilities are paranormal believers, and those that are skeptics aren't scoring very well. So sometimes it does suggest that you've got to be open to belief to actually have these experiences, but that's not always the case. But I suppose that could be in the case of the telephone calls from the dead, because you're more likely to skip through these rational interpretations. There's a lot of studies that find that when you study coincidence, or you put out a load of tasks that involve appraising coincidence, paranormal believers fail to actually appraise coincidence quite often compared to the skeptics. A typical question that you could ask in the lab is how many people would you need in a room for at least two of those people to share the same birthday? And you think, well, you need at least one person for every day of the year or something like that. But actually, there are so many people in the world, coincidences are actually far greater than you think, but sometimes they appear paranormal. In that case, you only need 23 people in a room for statistically two of them to share the same birthday. But normally we think, wow, that's incredible, you two share the same birthday and you've never met before and you're just in this room. Again, this is the whole difference between skeptics and believers when we look at them in a psychological way. We break it down into statistics, and it's not always the case, but this is kind of just a general assumption of what psychology has found, and I suppose that could be applied definitely to the telephone calls from the dead. But it's hard for me to study that in the research I've been doing, because some of the accounts that I've got of people that have had telephone calls from the dead are now no longer with us, so I can't follow it up, and there's probably not enough people due to that where I can actually send them surveys to test their religiosity, their paranormal belief, their death anxiety, and so on. Because I probably only have like 15 when I've actually got a case file full of, say, 50 or 60 phone calls from the dead. Mm-hmm. And it's not really giving me very useful statistics at the end of the day. So I've got to go back to the old kind of ghost hunter's trick of, if I was collecting accounts of people that have seen a ghost, I'm collecting accounts of people that have had telephone calls from the dead, and I can lay them all out on the floor and I can start to put them into different categories and find out what's going on. And that's regardless of whether the people are skeptics or believers of the paranormal. I've got to look for the rational explanations of the telephone call, the circumstances surrounding it. And there are a lot of cases that I've had to just discount because there are too many rational explanations. There are some cases where I wish there was more information in them so I could make sense of them. But there aren't. So this is why we put them together. And to put them together as one big case file and look for patterns, that means that we're ironing out the creases where it wouldn't work as a case study. If you've just got one case where someone says, oh, I lost my mum and I had a telephone call the other day and I heard someone down the phone say her name and I think that was her and I never checked with the call company, there was no witnesses in the room, you've got very little to go on with that account. Put it together with all the other accounts that have got very good kind of evidence to back up what they're saying, you can see if it actually falls into the patterns of the others. So you can kind of ignore that missing information to an extent. It's important not to forget that there is missing information, but it helps us kind of carry out these studies a little bit better. It's a sort of general tactic of psychology, and it's what we use in qualitative studies. If we looked at a whole group of interviews, say, on any subject, really. Anything.
Well, you know, I've been watching the chat room as we've been talking, and a lot of people say that they have had those types of experiences, a phone call from the dead, or what they believe to be. And a friend of mine was telling me the other day that she got a call after her father had passed. She picked up the phone, and he used her pet name to identify himself, which nobody ever used. You know, it's just, I can't, like with all things paranormal, do you believe that there's ever a way to quantify all this stuff and come to a conclusion that this is yes happening or no happening? Or do we just keep spinning our wheels? I mean, we're still wondering if there's any such thing as a ghost, you know? So how does that, will it continue on and on or what?
In terms of an experience, I think there are things such as ghosts. People do encounter them, people report them. It's just what's caused them, which is a different matter. And as I've said before, psychology has got so many explanations for human behaviour, and it's so varied. When it comes to parapsychological phenomena, there is no universal explanation for ghosts. There is no universal explanation for the phone calls from the dead. But I have got a whole list of explanations that could cause them, and the same goes for apparitions. So, as I just spoke about the content analysis and putting all cases together and looking at them as a whole, at the same time you have to break them down and look at each individual case and find the explanations that fit each one, because there'll be different people, different circumstances, and so on. If we have ruled out all the rational explanations and we're left with what does appear to be a phone call from the dead, as this, what I'm doing now is only the second study, I can then start to build any theories on what could be going on. I might just be left with the theory that, okay, if personality does survive death in some form, it seems to be present here in trying to actually communicate with the living. What does that mean, though? This is where we're stuck, and I can understand that we are kind of sending ourselves in circles. And it's just as difficult as another area of psychology, which is consciousness studies in general. We're trying to figure out the hard problem of consciousness, and that is what actually makes conscious experiences in the first place. I mean, what is this, what we're experiencing right now? We're on a radio show, and we're sat in front of a computer, we've got things around us, but what is all of this? What does it mean? What are our senses? What is existence? That is a hard question to answer, but we're living it, we're experiencing it. I can speak for myself subjectively, but I can't account for everyone else. I can't say that everyone else is experiencing the same things I do. If I taste chocolate and you taste chocolate, I'm sure we can both say that it's chocolate, but are we both tasting the same thing? So our conscious experiences could be different. If you see a ghost and I see a ghost, are we seeing the same thing, even though we could probably describe the exact same ghost? This is the problem, and psychology has still got a lot more to actually explain and explore, and it's something we're barely even scratching the surface of. So we're actually, to some extent, probably trying to run before we can walk when it comes to looking at paranormal phenomena, because we need to understand the basics, such as how does the human mind work in the first place, before we can understand these extensions of the human mind, which is, okay, what have we got left after the human brain is dead and gone? We don't even know what's here when it's around to a full extent. So it's early days. Maybe it's going to be long after I'm dead that someone might actually come up with some answers, but these are the early stepping stones, and someone's got to research them so future generations can actually look at the errors, look at the areas where we were right and wrong, and actually learn from it and take it further. So I think this is why we're kind of frustrated, because we want all the answers now, straight away, but we probably can't have that at the moment. We've just got to document everything we see, do it properly, do it in as much of a scientific manner as we can, try not to fool ourselves and jump to rational explanations or insist that paranormal phenomena is going on. Okay, it does seem to be going on, so let's look at as many rational explanations as we can, stuff that we know is going on, stuff that we can understand from contemporary science, before we delve into these paranormal explanations. Only then can we actually build a good file of paranormal experiences and try to make sense of them and find a new stepping stone for science, which is paranormal phenomena, which we can understand, which then becomes rational and natural.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like I have told Kieran O'Keefe several times, I wouldn't ever want to be in his brain, because you guys think so rationally and so unemotionally in most cases, because you have to. I would get lost forever. If my brain started thinking like that, I think I'd be gone. I'd probably be making phone calls from the other side, because it's just, we're a society that wants answers now. We don't have a lot of patience. And to sit there and quantify everything and gather data and sit patiently and wait for something to happen, my hat's off to you, because it's just absolutely amazing.
Kieran found one for me the other day from Spain, a phone call from the dead. He's getting that to me. One of his friends from Spain has had one, and they're trying to translate the whole case for me, so that'll be interesting to get a hold of.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And the beat goes on, as Sonny and Cher said. I mean, it's just fascinating and so fascinating, but we are running out of time, as usual. Hours fly by too quickly. But before I go, or before we go, I hate to stop here, but I want you to have the opportunity to let everybody know where they can go to find more out about you and the subject and any reading material they might be interested in.
Well, some of my papers are on my website, but I do need to start to upload them. But if you go to www.calcooper.com, you'll find everything about me. You can contact me from there. It has a brief outline of some of my history and research. Let me drop a bombshell now. I am actually writing at the moment the revised edition of Phone Calls from the Dead, and actually putting together all the evidence from these new cases. So
two or
three months more down the line, it'll be out. It'll be available. And then I'll be doing another research paper after that to follow up the analysis. So there'll be more material to come that will be accessible on Phone Calls from the Dead, and what I've actually been doing and how I've gone about it. And it will go over what Rogo and Bayliss did, the history and everything.
Oh, that's exciting. We'll have to have you back when that comes out to talk a little bit more about it. What a great reason to have you back. Glad you dropped that bombshell. Well, thank you for being here tonight, Cal, and for staying up so late. And hang on the line just a minute after we get done so we can thank you properly. And I want to thank everybody in everybody here for listening tonight. And please come back next week. My guest is going to be author and incense maker Carl Neal. And he's got a great book that we're going to talk about called, Incense. So until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more fun. Any rebroadcast or other use of